Good morning and welcome to the June 3rd, 2019 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. We have a need this morning for an executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by the RCW. We will need about 30 minutes in executive session. And then we will come back to continue our study session at 10 a.m. this morning.
Thank you.
We are coming out of executive session. It is June 3rd, 2019. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. We will now move into our regularly scheduled study session. Good morning and welcome to the June 3rd, 2019 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for coming this morning and also remind you, please silence any electronic devices that you may have brought with you today. Today's meeting is both a study and business session, with the study session starting this morning at 10 a.m. and the afternoon business session starting at 1. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that meetings are recorded, so if you wish to address any item on the agenda, we ask that you come to the microphone, please state your name and address for the record, and please limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have all five commissioners present, General Manager Steve Wright, General Counsel Eric Walquist, and Rebecca Garfin, Clerk of the Board. I'd like to invite Tika Sellers in leading the Pledge of Allegiance and a safety minute.
Good morning. I
pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Tika Sellers, customer outreach specialist with Customer Utilities, and we are on a little bit of a safety campaign right now regarding balloons, specifically metallic balloons. So I thought might as well do the safety minute of the commission meeting, share this information with you and anyone else that's here or listening. So I'll tell you what our key messages are, and then I'll just give you a real quick rundown of how we're sharing this information with the community, and then if you'd like any of the materials, you're welcome to them. So our tagline is, don't let metallic balloons ruin your party. Stay safe and keep metallic balloons out of power lines. Power outages happen when a metallic balloon touches a power line. An outage can affect thousands of Chelan County residents. Metallic balloons touching power lines can also cause fires, damage property, and lead to injuries. Help us keep our community safe. Do not release metallic balloons into the air. Tie all ribbons to weights, but do not tie the ribbons together. Never use metallic ribbon with helium-filled balloons, and properly dispose of metallic balloons. Puncture and deflate before reusing or throwing away. Never try to retrieve balloons from the power lines. Call our hotline, and then we have this on a website. So this is a rat card. It's English on one side, Spanish on the other. We've been distributing these all over the place. We've also got an 8.5 by 11 flyer that's English and Spanish. So this will go up in our park shelters and other places around the community. And then if you're interested, I've got our outreach plan and it lists everything that we're doing. So some of the things that we've done is this rat card website. We're adding some messages to our parks website. When people rent a park shelter or plan a special event, they'll get this information in the message. We're going to stuff these in park passes. We've done social media. So like Wenatchee High School shared our messages last week. We did a series of 4 or 5 social posts. We've been on the radio. We've done media releases. So we've done all sorts of stuff. If you're interested in seeing the list, you're welcome to look at this. Any questions?
I'm just curious, have we had any kind of reportable incidents with balloons in the past?
Sure. I have one in my office, actually, that caused an outage at Central Washington Hospital earlier this year. Yeah. I think it was in February.
There was a bigger one than that. So you remember the Birch Mountain fire last year, the 3,400 acres?
Yeah.
There's evidence, strong evidence. In fact, the conclusion of the fire inspector, that was metallic balloons touching our transmission lines that come from Rocky Ridge.
Yeah. They do try to record them sometimes if they know what caused the outage, you know, whether it was a squirrel or a balloon. So it's hard to say, you know, that we had exactly this many, but you know, sometimes we talk about it, and you could say, you know, maybe a couple, one a month. I don't know. I'd have to ask John what his thoughts are. But anyways, yeah, I mean, it's significant. You'd be surprised.
Yeah.
So.
Question. Tika.
Yeah.
I maybe I wasn't paying attention like I should have been. Is this going out dual language?
Yep. It's English on this side, Spanish on this side.
And radio and everywhere.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep. So we've been working with Mario, and he, so Kids Fest last weekend, they handed these out, and he is working on some outreach
good.
To that community. So, yeah.
Good. Thanks.
You're welcome. Any other questions? We'll be at General Manager's Forum on Thursday. Dave Parkhill is doing all the safety meetings. I'm going out to Rocky Reach Discovery Center's staff meeting. So we're getting the word out there as much as we can.
Well, that's great.
Thanks, yeah. Tika. Thanks.
Well, commissioners, we have before us a consent agenda. Items on the consent agenda are subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon request of any commission member. Do I hear any such request?
Management has suggested that Resolution 16 might be appropriate to move to the consent agenda.
Okay. Is it seconded anywhere?
To me.
Second that.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The ayes have it. Steve, would you like to?
Yeah, I'd like to introduce our Cycle Personal Ownership winner for this month, Evan Busey. Come on up. So we're really proud of Evan. He's done some great job. Evan's a journeyman wireman on a substation crew. He was recommended for his focus on operational excellence and stewardship. He makes suggestions about research. He does research, looking up information, gets options, finds suppliers, get a general idea of the cost, and presents the package to the crew for opinions and the superintendent for approval. And I think the thing that really impacted a lot of us when we were looking at this is that we have safety practices, equipment, and systems in place, all because Evan saw a need to do a more efficient way of doing our jobs, a more safe way of doing our jobs, and he manages to do all that while continuing to be a productive member of the crew. So, Evan, we welcome you, and really appreciate the work that you're doing. And, looks like you've actually got a microphone in your hand, which is wonderful. We'll give you a chance to say something if you want to.
So. I appreciate that. It's good to be here. Last time I was in this room, I was in just starting as a trainee, so I'd like to thank John and Chad and Brian for setting up a great culture in our shop where it allows me to excel at my job. So it's been good since I've been here.
How many years have you been here?
7.5.
Very good. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I don't know by now. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Really good. I enjoyed reading this.
Yeah. Good job, Evan.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your hard work. Here.
Okay, with that, we are ready for our next item, which is the insurance renewal program. Recall, this is the annual review of the insurance renewal program. So I'm going to invite Ron Gibbs up.
Ron Gibbs, Insurance and Claims Manager. Here to speak about the renewal. The presentation today is for informational purposes only. No action is required. It's our annual update on the premiums for the renewal. And the insurance renewal date will be July 1st, 2019. And we're continuing negotiations up until that point. On the 17th of June, we'll have a motion before you with a not-to-exceed amount to consider. The insurance marketing effort supports the district value of stewardship by protecting the public resources entrusted to us through managing risks and controlling costs. Each year we meet with as many insurance companies as we can and try to highlight the characteristics about the PUD that demonstrate that we are a quality organization that they should really want to insure and provide quotes as low as possible. So this year I spoke about investments that we've been making towards basically modernizing our generation assets. And I talked about our asset management program and how it's advancing and how we're able to identify the critical components that help us prioritize our maintenance to minimize potential breakdowns. And then I also talked about the exciting things going on at the Hydro Research Institute and how we plan to leverage that data and how we expect it going forward. That's going to help us enhance the management of our hydro assets. And the liability for the liability underwriters, I talked about the good work that folks like TICA and our communications group is doing to educate the public about the dangers associated with power equipment. So hoping to minimize any issues with public safety. After the recent California fires, every single liability underwriter I met with this year asked about our wildfire exposure. And so I was able to share that we're beginning the process of working on wildfire mitigations, as you've heard in previous presentations. And so that work turns out to be quite timely. This year, I also asked our broker to obtain an additional quote for another $25 million of liability insurance just for consideration. And that's driven by a number of factors. I don't like to speak in public session about what potential factors those might be, but depending on the quote, it might be worth considering purchasing the additional coverage. It's not something we have to do as part of this renewal. So if we can take our time to evaluate further, but I just want to get the quote and have that available to think about and go from there. We also did receive a great report back from our insurance mechanical breakdown assessment that was done. The engineer came out, met with all of our staff for several days back in March, and they came out with no recommended changes for the way we're operating or maintaining our plants. So they were really pleased with how we're doing things. And that report goes out to all the insurance companies. So some considerations for the renewal this year. The worldwide insurance market is tightening up for the property insurance especially. There's less capacity for coverage and higher premiums this year. Every single underwriter talked about how bad the losses were in 2018. It was the fourth highest for property losses on record. Other issues that we're dealing with, we've had some units with problems out at Rock Island, Powerhouse 1, B5 through B10. Two different units have had some mechanical failures, and that's causing concern for the insurance companies. Of course, the wildfire losses that have happened cause them to have concerns about anybody they might perceive having a wildfire exposure. In fact, we've had one insurance company that we've been doing business with providing $25 million in coverage is no longer covering utility business because of the wildfire exposure. So we'll have to fill that gap this year. So negotiations are ongoing, but we've tried to put together some estimates for you. I will admit this year, we're not getting the quotes in as fast as we have in years past just because of the market conditions. We're on the property side, it's a little more certain. We're expecting an 8.9% increase, if not better. We're continuing to negotiate. Again, driven by just the market conditions are hardening. So last year, the premium was $1.2 million. We're up at $1,347,000 is our current estimate for property coverage. And that includes mechanical breakdown. On the general liability side, we have some gaps to fill, and I'm working with a broker and trying to press them as much as I can. But we're getting additional questions back from underwriters, and trying to provide that information and kind of last-minute questions. So I'm hoping in this week, hopefully, to get some more quotes. But currently, we're projecting a 6.9% increase. The broker's estimate for what he thinks that additional $25 million will be quoted at is $50,000. Remains to be seen. We haven't received the quote yet. You can kind of see the trajectory of our premiums. We were able to get after the units, the Rocky Reach C8 through C11 units, we saw a pretty significant increase in premium costs. And since that time, we've been able to drive that down while increasing our insurance liability limits. So we've been buying more insurance, but still getting the premiums down. Last 2 years, though, the insurance market has changed pretty significantly, and now we're seeing the rates go up. This is an overview of all of the insurance policies that we renew. I just do the graphs for the larger policies, but you can see some of the other coverages that we buy, including crime and cyber liability, non-owned aircraft fiduciary liability. So if the estimates hold true, we're looking at a 7.7% increase, which is right in line with our 2019 budget, very close to the budget. And then, again, I've noted here the option of adding the $25 million in coverage. Of course, as I said before, that doesn't have to happen at the June 17th board meeting. This is the typical motion that we present. Of course, we'll have the dollar figure added in. It's the same as we've done in years prior. So we'll continue to pursue the quotes and try to negotiate the best deal that we can get. And we will return in 2 weeks and hopefully complete the insurance renewals by July 1. Are there any questions?
The engineer that you spoke about that came in and did the assessment, is that paid by the insurance company? Do we hire that separately? Who is that individual?
So the insurance companies require you to provide the report, but they won't pay for it, of course. So we have to pay for it.
I see.
And the engineer that we brought in has over 30 years experience in the industry, highly respected, and worked for 30 years for our primary insurance carrier on the property side of Aegis.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next up, we have, you may recall that we did some work on fire hardening, a risk assessment a few years ago, and we identified as one of our primary concerns what's known as the Sunage Canyon Dead Horse transmission line. So we're back now to talk about reacting to that and beginning to get into public comment around a proposal to help to remedy that risk. Chad Bowman, Steve Wickle will be presenting.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Chad Bowman, Director of Transmission Compliance.
Steve Wickle, Transmission Engineering Manager. And I was at a lacrosse tournament all weekend yelling at kids, so coach.
So this project really is, in some respects, a reconstitution of a project that existed perhaps 25 years ago, which is before my time, slightly before my time here, where the idea was to bring a transmission line up the Chumstick to serve Plain in a more reliable way. At the time, residents of Plain were opposed to that idea, and eventually the district dropped that idea back in 2000-2001. So what we'd like to do is, as we look about this and think about fire risk and other things, go have that conversation with the community again and see what their feedback might be on a couple different alternatives. That's really kind of the background, the wildfire, the alternatives, and the outreach. So, like I said, in the mid-90s, the district had this idea to build this line and ultimately canceled the project. You know, since that time, there's been a windstorm in 2006. There were some structures down in Dead Horse Canyon, a very difficult place to get to back in 2006, even more difficult to get to today because one of the primary access roads that have been used for years has been undermined by the river. It's really deemed unsafe to use, so we have an overland route that only works in the summer. In 2012, there was the ice storms that caused outages off and on. You might remember those for 10 days or so. After those ice storms and those prolonged outages, there were some informal comments that we heard from at least a few people around Plain about, well, geez, what do you think about that idea you had 10 years ago? And then we have assessed wildfire risk, and we're here today to really talk about maybe kicking off some community outreach to that area. So you've seen this slide before, I think. As part of the overall wildfire assessment, but this is really the Plain. Plain is right here. Lake Wenatchee substation is here. Coles Corners down here. And so those, each one of those circles that's orange or red is a pole that's in high fire risk danger, which is perhaps a bit of a scale that's a bit too granular given the fire landscape that's up here, and we should really think about things on a bigger, from a bigger perspective. And really that desire to improve resilience, the strategic plan to harden infrastructure from wildfire and weather events. So as we were thinking about this, we superimposed the Cougar Creek fire from last year over that area, kind of centered on Cole's Corner, and really asking ourselves, well, what would happen, you know, if there was a fire of that magnitude in that area? And understanding, too, right, that this area right here, which is where Sunnich and Dead Horse Canyon is, if you look at some of the old fire maps or the fire maps of historical fires, that's one of the few areas up in the Plain Lake Wenatchee area that actually hasn't burned in recent memory or memory at all. So probably high fire danger risk here, up on the Plain Tap up here. And really thinking about, you know, how the Cougar Creek fire unfolded last year. And, you know, that went on for 3 or 4 weeks. We wouldn't be able to get in there during those 3 or 4 weeks. Even after the firefighters, you know, had contained the fire, it's probably not safe to put line crews in there yet, with standing timber and all of those things. So perhaps, I mean, in a worst case, I'm not trying to scare people, but perhaps in a worst case, I mean, you do end up with, you know, 3,400 customers that are out of service for, you know, maybe a couple of months or a month or two, depending on how the fire unfolds and what happens, again, just for illustrative purposes. So really, to try to orient you again, the Dead Horse, the place we call Dead Horse, is right in this area. The only way to get there, the couple of overland routes that require a railroad signal master with us, because we have to cross the railroad tracks 2 times to get there. In the winter, we can't get there other than we have contingency plans to actually rail equipment in, utilize the railroad to get in there. So really hard to get to. So as we think about this, certainly the public safety aspect of, right, you need electricity to pump water, to pump gasoline for the fire trucks, for lots of other reasons for public safety. That line was originally constructed back in the early 30s. Some of it's still original construction, especially the conductor, which since some recent research, conductor manufactured before World War II, it's got certain anomalies in it that might indicate it's about time to replace it. Like I mentioned, it's an area of the forest that hasn't burned. It's about 3,400 customers. It's really hard to get to Sunnich and Dead Horse Canyons.
So that was this was all originally Puget Sound Energy then?
Right. Okay. Yep. It was originally built in the 30s as part of Rock Island.
Okay.
We require railroad assistance in the winter, and it's a narrow right-of-way through Sunnich and Dead Horse where the yeah, I mean, you might think of the power line as being 60-foot tall, 65-foot tall structures, but then 50 feet away from it's a Doug fir that's 120 feet tall. So,
no. Are the structures wood?
Yes. So really, hope and Steve can kind of walk through the, we've really come up with two different alternatives to think about this, one that we like a lot more than the other.
Yeah, so I actually developed the, or we created these poster boards more for the community outreach, so they're a little small for the purposes of in here far away, but this is alternative one. It's again, it's just a proposal. The yellow is the existing transmission line, what you saw on that slide. This is the Plain Tap up to Lake Wenatchee, and here's Cole's Corner, and this is Chumstick Highway. So what we're proposing on alternative one is the red dot section is just a rebuild in the existing alignment. And from there, we would like to take a whole new transmission route, kind of up the Chumstick and up over Beaver Hill, I believe it's called, to Plain, and then also connect Plain to Lake Wenatchee along the highway. And the white dots then would
be proposed to be decommissioned. So this is through Sunnich Canyon and Dead Horse Canyon. And the service then would be looped service, fed from both sides. All the substations would be fed from both sides rather than being fed singularly as they are now, where if a fire went through here, that would just be, plane would be out of power for a while until we could get that repaired.
How would it be looped if you decommissioned?
It continues. It's all the way through to Cole's Corner and out.
Okay, and the out is...
So this is up over to Summit.
Snohomish
yes.
County. Okay. So this would be our transmission to Puget Sound Energy.
Yes. So the nice thing about this is it gets us, of course, out of the difficult to access Dead Horse Canyon and Sunnich Canyon. And it also, again, has looped flow power sources to Plain and Lake Wenatchee. So alternative two really is just to rebuild where we're at. I have the pros and cons slide that I can go over the pros and cons here shortly, but again, it's just to rebuild clear to Cole's Corner in steel. I failed to mention that this is a rebuild in steel, not in wood poles. In addition to that, in this proposal actually is a ring bus here at Cole's Corner so that a single fault on this line doesn't lose all the customers. Currently, the way it is right now, where the protection isolates for faults anywhere on this line, including the taps, all of these customers, Cole's Corner, Winton, Plain, and Lake Wenatchee, all go in the dark for a tree in the line, lightning, anything. And so a ring bus here would at least help this have a little bit more reliability to it, even if we went in the same alignment.
Where's the Winton Mill on that?
Right here.
Winton?
Yep. Yeah, sorry, it's a little small for the purposes of this group, but it works well with the drop-in session when we talk to folks.
Remind me the cost difference between metal pole and wood pole. Steel pole, you said.
Right. Kind of depends on where it's going, but a few thousand dollars. I don't know, Chad, do you have a better number on that?
A few thousand dollars. And it really depends. Steel prices are very volatile right now. Economic conditions. It's hard to say right
now. Okay.
Yeah, we had our estimates come back almost double from what they were on a steel pole bid that we just went out on. So it's tough to say where that's going to go. But it is a little more expensive, but you don't have, you know, theoretically, the maintenance. We installed a 230 line from Rocky Reach to Andrew York back in, was that 2006, 2008? And, we've not done anything.
So is there any line. Is there, just trying to think. Why would we, if there's not much cost difference, why would we continue to put in wood poles? Is it because of the aesthetics?
No. So now it's kind of a different question here. We've been, steel structures have been custom made installs for us. We are now actually evaluating, they call them LD poles, but Avista Utilities has already gone to where their replacement program put steel poles in. Mm-hmm. We are just starting those evaluations. We met with Avista. So, matter of fact, we have three jobs coming up where we're going to test those out and have our line crews work with these new steel poles. So we're marching down that path.
Yeah.
We're in the beginning stages of it. It's a big endeavor.
There's those beautiful poles up at Lake Chelan. They're laminated wood, and they're shaped differently because of the strong winds. Those are beautiful. Those must be very expensive.
Well, they're kind of in between a regular wood pole and a steel pole.
Are they?
Oftentimes, and we have those in town. We have those in a lot of places. Just because they are a little less expensive than steel structures.
Do they hold up better than probably hold up better being laminated?
Yes, they're made for bigger reinforcement, for hard angled structures, you know, so we don't potentially have to use guying and stuff on people's properties. Mm-hmm. So,
can you go back to first?
Yes.
Number one, only from the standpoint of, was there a back feed that went down to Winton? And the residents?
Yes. Okay. So, I didn't actually show that, and I put the dotted line there for illustrative purposes, but you're absolutely right. That still would need to be backfed. We have that, I think, on a different slide. But
so you're just showing transmission here, not distribution.
Correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The distribution is actually in pink.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd hate to see the Alps left without electricity.
Right.
I like the candy.
Right. Any other questions on these? Let's see. So, of course, there's always alternative three, which is do nothing for now. It doesn't address, of course, the aging infrastructure nor the risk of extended outages due to fire and weather. It's kind of a wordy slide. I apologize for that. But alternative one, of course, is the new reroute. It's easy access to structures. That's one of the big bonuses of this, because it'd be along the roadway or just behind it. Looped service to the substation. It does support the current strategic plan and provides the greatest sectionalizing capabilities of all the options. It does require new easements and permits, which could take some time, more visible to customer owners, and would be the longest to construct because of that. An estimated cost of $40 to $60 million. Alternative two, easements are already in place, so that's great. Would be a shorter time to construct, and it does support the strategic plan as well. But the difficult access areas to Sunish and Dead Horse remain. It doesn't provide looped service to Plain and Lake Wenatchee, and longer repair times due to access potentially if something catastrophic happened. Its estimated cost is also $40 to $60 million. And the do-nothing alternative, it delays costs to a future year, which can be good. Risk of extended power outages, wildfire and weather, and aging infrastructure remain. And we did want to point out that these proposed resilience projects are not a revenue source. We're not proposing this. This was a kind of a sticky point, I think, in the previous initiative. Some of the folks thought that we were just trying to make money by building a new transmission line and get more customers or something. And that's not the case here.
Yeah, let's just put a finer point on that. $50 million to serve 3,400 customers. We will never recover the cost of this line. This is all about the reliability that we feel that we're responsible to deliver to customers.
Well, and fire liability.
And fire liability risk.
As I was going through this, I got thinking, you know, when you get into that Dead Horse area, I just know that there are a number of times in the winter when the accessibility there is really difficult. It doesn't seem to me that we've had anybody hurt yet. And so, you know, part of my consideration in looking at this is I think we need to be in the business of removing the word yet, you know, and reducing that risk to our own crews, plus increasing reliability. So those would be, from this commissioner, two points of view in reviewing this.
I think I would agree with you on both of those points, Commissioner. I think, to me, alternative two, while it makes things better, doesn't it seem to me, at least from my engineering mind, to be the long-term viable solution. If you do have a fire, back in the Dead Horse area, you won't be able to get there. You won't be able to get crews there. And if you build it in steel and other things, it will survive better than what's there now. But a big, hot wildfire back there, it will still be challenging to get to and repair and do what needs to be done versus something that's, you know, a couple hundred yards off the highway.
What's a typical width of a transmission easement in this setting for being able to remove growth?
Use 100 feet typically, 50 feet on either side of center line.
And what's the elevation of those lines generally? I mean, I know it varies.
Right. 65 feet-ish for the line itself. And like Chad said, I mean, the trees on either side could be 100, 120 feet.
That's what I was going to say.
Tall. Yeah.
Plus, we also, that corridor width is actually in a lot of places more like 60 feet, even though we have
the current one.
Yes. And then to actually widen that would be a big deal.
to the Forest Service, and it would be quite an effort to widen them, like the BPA corridors that are so beautiful out there for transmission lines.
Would that play out better with the new route, being able to widen the corridor with the new easements?
We've sort of discussed that. I would hope so. It's all in. It's a property owner's, so it could be a little challenging there.
It could be challenging. The other advantage of the alignment along the chum stick is really it's something you can almost drive to every structure, almost any time of year. Versus, like say, dead horse is a challenge to get to.
And there's a lot more private property along the chum stick than there is up the dead horse.
The landowner piece of this, right? And we'd just like to go out and talk to Plain and Lake Wenatchee and see what they think about this and see what their thinking has changed over the years.
Was the original objection just sight, the aesthetics? Was that the original objection?
I think so. I think it was aesthetics, and I think... but I think as a bit of history, if you're interested, I think what occurred back in the early 90s was that basically the Lake Wenatchee and Plain areas were fed from Coles Corner or Leavenworth, and that the Plain and Lake Wenatchee substations didn't exist until the early. And in the early 90s, the district built both of these stations, along with the 115 taps to go there. And then turned right around and said, well, geez, we would like to also, now that we've got this done, you know, build this into Plain. And as we've read some of the old articles that we found, it was really the assertion by some of the residents, well, geez, you've increased our reliability so much by building those substations and those transmission taps that we don't need anything else. And we don't want, to your point, that ugly power line coming through.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for sharing.
You think the recent history, in especially the West with wildfire, has probably... created some people, some thought process in people that might, their view might be changing?
Perhaps. That's a bit of our hope and why we'd like to go talk to the folks there. Both the ice storm in 2012, I know the plane was really on the edge last year when they could look up and see the Cougar Creek fire creeping towards them, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
So, lastly on this then, for outreach objectives, we're really hoping to go here in June, July, and reach out to specific key stakeholders. John Stoll and Chad Bowman, I think we're going to reach out to the mayor of Plain and go try to get some support there with a larger outreach in the summer and fall, you know, with mailers and drop-in sessions and things like that to the community at large was going to be the game plan.
So when you say the mayor of Plain...
Yeah.
Self-proclaimed.
Huh? George is talking about retiring from everything. I just saw him.
Uh-oh. Guess we better go quick.
I think this is one that would really tweak his interest.
Yeah, I would call him more the unofficial mayor of Plain, but there's a gentleman up there. He's the owner of the Beaver Valley Lodge. He's very active in the community. In fact, he hosted some meetings for us, and... I think he's someone in that community to be very influential and would help get the word out to support these outreach efforts. So, Graham Watson's his name.
Ah.
Graham
Watson.
Watson. Watson.
Let's see.
Good presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks. Right. Thanks for that information.
Okay, next up, we have a discussion of public power benefits. Recall we do this in the spring and the fall. This is the spring discussion where we'll be talking about where we're at for 2019 spend and also budgeting for 2020, even though at this point we're still in the midst of strategic planning, which will better define where we're going, but we still need to make some budgeting decisions at this point for where we're going for 2020. So with that, Felicity Saberhagen will be presenting.
Thank you, Steve. Felicity Saberhagen, business manager. Purpose of this presentation is threefold. As Steve mentioned, one will be to provide funding for the 2020 budget. Second will be to give you a brief update on some ongoing projects and the successes we've had. And lastly, to bring forward three new projects for potential funding. The program has been in effect for 5 years now. It's quite a long time. We're currently reevaluating the criteria, as Steve mentioned, for the 2024 planning, but still prudent to go ahead and look at what we would be doing for 2020. In 2018, the board assigned three projects for funding. That still leaves us with $1.55 million in remaining funds to be allocated. I'll share a couple of projects in a few minutes to for your consideration. In 2020, we are recommending $4 million in funding, similar to what we've done in years past. That is primarily based on the fact that we had a really strong financial year in 2018 and are also projecting another one in 2019. It's always a pleasure to look back and see what we've accomplished over that five-year window. Four projects were studied and fully implemented during this time frame. Over 2,900 fiber premises have been passed with 800 new connections. In our parks program, we've issued over 7,000 day-use park passes since 2015. And our Hydro Research Institute is now fully independent and has a patent pending in application form. And our charging stations, we have had over 2,000 charges over the four locations with five different charging stations in them. Slicing out 2019, over 1,000 passes have been issued this calendar year. We are well into our pilot of the supported employment for a person with developmental disabilities. And the Rocky Reach Center is in flight with the fish viewing windows expected to be installed this winter. And our fiber is continued expansion and infill with Sunny Slope, Render Canyon, Mary Canyon, Chumstick, Eagle Creek for the remainder of the year, and Stein Hill will be started in fourth quarter. These are the projects that are currently active. You'll notice I have not mentioned the Harran area rehabilitation. We're currently working with the city and other parties to come up with the best solution as the Confluence Parkway is underway. Also, in fourth quarter, we'll be installing some monitoring equipment to understand the influence that both the Wenatchee and the Columbia Rivers have on that area. The three projects that were funded out of 2019 include fiber, the day-use parks pass, and the museum story. We still have the $1.55 million to allocate. And the three projects we'd like to bring forward today include a loop trail extension, and that is to connect the new service center to the loop trail. It is not contemplated as part of the scope of the project because it doesn't have a business need associated with it, so we'd like to pull that out and fund that through public power benefits. The art in the park are the sculptures that are in the parks today. So as you walk through, you'll see about 14 sculptures. Seven of them have already been purchased by the city. The remaining seven, the Art on the Avenues Association has approached us and asked if we would be willing to purchase those. It's about $125,000 with tax. If you are curious about which sculptures those are, I do have pictures of those, and I'd be happy to share those with you outside of that. And lastly, we have negotiated a rate with State Parks for a five-year rate of $10. We've used that this past year and the year before. Would like to continue being able to take advantage of that rate by funding the program for a three-year package. That would extend us out through 2020, 21, and 22.
That extension on the trail, approximately how long would that be?
It's not very long. I want to say it's a little over a quarter mile, but I could be wrong. I can get a little more information on that for you. It depends on the path we choose. There's a number of alternatives that are out there right now. So it is in preliminary stages, so it does require negotiating with the railroad for permit to cross the tracks. And, yeah, there's a number of
that's items. The private railroad. It's, yeah, that's not Berlin. It's on the old station side. Yeah.
It's on the old station side. You're correct.
You know, I'd emphasize that we know this will cost some money to do this. We are at a really early stage of estimating costs. And I'm a little bit hesitant to put numbers out there. On the other hand, we need to put some kind of placeholder in here. We have a lot of work to do to better understand what it would cost to be able to accomplish the vision, which includes access to the river, trail extension, possibly doing something for the Horan House Memorial of some kind. These are all things that we have in our mind, but really work to estimate what it would look like, what it would cost to do that. It's way early.
Are you finished? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Steve, so that would include the trail extension down in front of where the Horan House was, and the purchase of what we're contemplating, and the purchase of the old McDougal House.
Yeah, that's part of what we're thinking about, and that's where I say that cost estimates are really early to be trying to define a budget. We'll be doing more work, and I expect us to know quite a bit more by the fall than where we're at today. But
I'm really interested. I think several of us are really interested in that.
I think we've heard interest from the board on this, and we understand our direction is to go see if we can make something work and bring you back something. That, so we're definitely at work on it, but at this point, I don't have a detailed breakdown of it would cost this much for land and this much for a trail, and we just don't have that right now.
Yeah, and to tag on to that, the project manager described it as a rough order of magnitude, meaning it's, probably not $10 million, but $1 million is kind of close. So this would get us started in terms of the design, and then also being able to launch that.
I think the thing that we felt good about and the reason why we're proposing it is I think we did feel like we had clear direction from the board. We should be working on this. This creates at least an avenue for funding, which is separate from the business case for the service center. So we generally understand the direction of the board to be, go make this work and try to make it work under PPB, and then we'll bring you back more.
I have sort of an off-the-wall question for Steve. It just popped into my mind. So is it difficult at times, too? It must be to draw the line between what's a clear business case and what is not. And is that decision, that usually falls upon you?
Yeah, I think so. Although most of the time I don't find it difficult, because these are things that there isn't a clear net present value associated with it. There's not something that you can say, I understand how we will recover these costs through traditional rates and the service that we're required to provide. So these are things that you say, it's not an obligation under the project license, it's not an obligation for reliability purposes, it's something that's enhancing value. We have the authority to be able to engage in this activity. We don't necessarily have a mechanism to recover the cost.
Okay. Yeah.
For 2020 funding, 2020 funding. We have one project right now on the, and that is just the fiber. It's about $2.5 million. It's a little bit is dependent on what comes about with the National Electric Safety Codes, depending on what the costs are associated with that this program would fund. So with that, next steps, we'd be looking for board guidance on setting the 2020 funding level. Again, staff recommends a $4 million allocation for 2020. Staff will continue looking at the themes that we learn from our topic teams, as well as the surveys that are out, and we'll incorporate that in future program needs. And we'll be back in the fall for board decision on initial projects from the 2020 allocation after we have that taken into consideration.
I'd like to take a second and add to the recommendation on the $4 million. So recall that we have criteria that both are backward-looking and forward-looking as to our financials. And certainly the backward-looking, you know, we've had, again, the best year ever financially last year. So that it easily meets the test in terms of the backward-looking. Forward-looking was built around the idea of if we're borrowing money, then that would be a warning flag as to whether we should, within the five-year period. And we do project that at this point, that we would be moving into the borrowing market. Recall last year we said the backward looking is so strong that it leads us to believe that we should use that as the primary reason for funding and not be as concerned about the borrowing in the future. So we said, let's keep it at $4 million. It's basically the same recommendation this year. And we are at least far enough through the strategic planning process with the topic team that we know the topic team's recommendation is to maintain the public power benefit. In fact, for the customer survey, we didn't even include the question as to whether there should be a public power benefit program. It's just if we have the financial resources, we should proceed. The topic team also recommended that we redo the criteria, recognizing that things have changed from where we were the last time, and that just because we're borrowing money doesn't mean that we're in difficult financial shape and therefore would not have a public power benefit program. So we know we're in the midst of a transition here to redo those criteria. We expect to be bringing something back to you as part of the strategic plan, probably in the summer sometime. And given that, we felt that maintaining the program on a planning basis for next year at the same level was the right choice for in terms of recommendation.
Just to clarify, so the suggestion or from the topic team was to review the criteria? That's the criteria as to whether or not we have a public power benefit program,
no.
not criteria in terms of what would qualify and what people would need to do in order to qualify.
Yeah, I'm realizing I'm being unclear. There were three questions, really. One was, should we have a public power benefit program or not? And that one, they've said yes, should.
Okay.
Financial wherewithal. Second one is, what's the criteria for determining the level of funding? And So that is the backward-looking financial and forward-looking mm-hmm. financial analysis, and they've said you should review that and probably update it, particularly to take into account that you may be borrowing in this five-year period, but that doesn't mean you're in bad financial shape. And then the third one was what types of activities should be funded, environmental, recreation, economic development, those types of categories, and that's the question that we're asking in the customer survey is, what types of things, if we have a program, what types of things should we be funding?
Good, that helped. That's great.
Are there any other questions? So I will make that packet available. I'll leave it at Rebecca's desk, and it's there's 14, I think, all 18 of the sculptures that are in there. I flagged the 7 that we're being requested to purchase by Art in the Avenues.
I do have a question, and this might be better directed to Steve. If the Confluence Parkway becomes reality and we move the trail, will those costs be part of the public power benefit? Or am I maybe ahead of even the getting to that point yet?
I'd say we don't know yet. We still are not even entirely clear on the route for Confluence Parkway, and we're pretty heavily engaged in those discussions with the city and with the folks who are putting together the environmental impact statement. There are different places where the potential routes could impact our trail, and I think we will have to make some decisions about that. We also have some transmission, for sure, that probably would need to be moved. Traditionally, that is a business expense. We do move things when there are roads that cause conflicts with our easements, and so that's been traditionally a business expense. So I think we're going to have to walk through the individual circumstances and make a determination as to, well, is this a traditional business expense, or is this something that actually is unique and therefore is really a decision on the part of the board as to enhancing the quality of life, and therefore really falls in the category of a public power benefit determination.
Okay, thank you.
So I would like to say that I'm looking for a head nod from the board, particularly with respect to both the $4 million and the three areas that we're talking about spending money in the remaining amounts, and don't need a formal resolution or vote on this, but if you're comfortable, this is what we'll be pursuing.
Got my head nod.
Looks well thought out.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Okay, next up, we want to update the board on the Rock Island support facilities. We've moved it from, I think from the board's perspective for a moment, when we came to you before and we were talking about a strategic plan for facilities, we really were at a very, very beginning of the design work, and we've now moved to 100% design. So it's time to check back in, talk about where we're at. Remember, we do have a strategic plan for facilities, but we always test our assumptions in that strategic plan along the way to say, so are the actuals that we're seeing, do they comport with our expectations at the time that we put the strategic plan together? And so this is one of those key moments to check in and say, where are we? That will also lead to a decision the board needs to make at the next board meeting about whether to proceed with a fairly large contract. Brett Bickford and Sam Dilley will be presenting.
Good morning, Brett Bickford, Director of Engineering and Project Management.
Sam Dilley, Project Manager.
Yes, this morning, Sam and I would like to give you an update of the Rock Island Facilities program, and hopefully we'll be able to be back later this month with a resolution to authorize an amendment to the existing GCCM contract with Leidig for a guaranteed maximum price to start the construction for the Rock Island facilities. In October 2017, a site plan, right at the beginning, we call this the conceptual planning phase. We proposed this layout that we see here. And in this layout, what we had envisioned for a cost of about $40.1 million was there would be a new storage building here at location C. Over at location B, we would have a new sandblast and paint building. We would do some modifications here in C7 for our hazardous materials. We would remodel shop C1 so that we could have a machine shop in there. We would put a new crew building here in location L with new lockers and a new place for the crews to assemble and get ready for their work and to finish their day. Over here at building K, we would build an engineering office that would also include operations maintenance support. And then the large facility where we'd have safety meetings like we do in the Stoner Webster building today. As you recall, the justification for this project was that currently the storage, warehouse, tool room, engineering offices were all on the Douglas County side of the river. So there was a tremendous amount of time that was taken going back and forth across the dam to get tools, equipment, and so this project was justified again for the $40.1 million for crew time efficiencies as well as building maintenance going forward in the future. What's I think really exciting about this GCCM process is, again, this was a conceptual design, but through this process, there's kind of five major steps. As we went through the second, the third, and the fourth, as we gained more information from the architects, from our construction consultant, and with the users of the facility, we were able to adapt and make this project even more beneficial. And Sam's going to talk about that process and what we've evolved to today.
Talk a little bit about the new site plan. The C21 building is the L building that you saw in the last site plan. This is the crew quarters. This is where they come to work. They get dressed. They are able to do their laundry in this facility. They can do their meeting and their mustering. They get together right now. This facility is replacing the old C5 Stone and Webster building. That was actually built to build Powerhouse 2. It was the engineers. We've added on to that three different times. It's got walls that are about an inch and a half thick, and it's just not a very efficient building. So, but the C-22 building is really what we're here to talk about today. It's most of the importance. This is the blast building down through the center, blast, paint here. There's a warehouse and a tool room here. There's a hazardous materials storage room here and an oil dispensary here. There's a new fabrication shop here and a machine shop here. So this building really came together. When you look back at the old site plan, we had a lot of work to do at different locations throughout the site, down in here too. So we brought all that together in the new site plan here. So I'm going to talk a little bit about project changes during the development. First of all, we heard about this during the planning phase, 16-17, we heard about this shuttle lift that they were talking about. We didn't really understand how we would use that shuttle lift. The shuttle lift is a large wheeled gantry crane that can take large items in and out of the storage building. And that we knew that we wanted the storage building. That's actually already been completed, constructed. We didn't understand how we could possibly use that, the benefit of that. And in going through the blast building design, we understood that we were planning to put a bridge crane in there. Well, using the shuttle lift, we were able to eliminate the bridge crane in the blast building, use the shuttle lift. So we were able to design the building to use to have the shuttle lift go through the heavy fabrication, paint, and blast rooms. Another thing that we, another aha moment was we started looking around out there and there is no fire protection. Actually, the fleet building was actually designed as a fire station way back when, and Chelan County used to actually staff a fire engine there in case there was ever a fire at Rock Island. So we wanted to meet current codes and standards. We need to meet current codes and standards. The aha moment came in that we needed to build a new water reservoir and a new pump station to pressurize that water in order to charge the hydrants and enable us to provide fire sprinklers inside the buildings. Some other changes that occurred, construction costs increase. We've seen industry trends throughout the last 18 months that exceed what we anticipated in 2016 and 2017 when we were planning these facilities. And this is manifest in the real thing that happens is you get few bids, you don't get a lot of people following your bids, and it's not unique to our project. We're seeing that throughout all district procurements. There was a day in 2009 when we'd open a bid and we'd have 12 bidders. Now we have 1 to 2 bidders. There's just not that competition in the market right now.
Quick question, Sam, on that, and going back before you get too far away from it, on the switch of the bridge crane to the mobile crane, does that pretty dramatically alter the specifications for the building itself in terms of its need for structural strength?
Yes, yes. The foundation is very much larger in order to drive that gantry crane on it. But some of the benefits that we saw were if you had a bridge crane in a blast room, dust would accumulate on that bridge crane. If you move that bridge crane into the paint room, you've got dust and debris on it, and now you're going to paint things and you're going to stir up the air. So we're wrestling with that sort of thing. We also looked at safety enhancements. Another utility that we looked at has a pendant crane where they drive their trucks under it, they pick it up, and they drive the truck out. What naturally happens? You can't position a truck perfectly under that pendant. So when you pick that, the load starts moving.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking massive loads, things that you don't want swinging from the ceiling. So we're able to take advantage of the shuttle lift, set it down carefully, and be able to position it. And when we started looking at the value of it, we kind of went, wow. We didn't see that when we were in 2016 and 2017 planning phases.
Yeah, well, you were what you shared with me that you have to increase the strength of the foundation and everything for the mobile crane. Don't you have a corresponding reduction need for strength in the rest of the building?
Sure. Yes. Yeah. Yes. The steel frame for the bridge goes away.
Yeah. So I mean, you've got a cost reduction one place, maybe an increase somewhere else.
Exactly. Yeah.
And for the shuttle lift in particular, it's quite tall so that we have enough room to pick and raise things. So the building had to get a little bit higher so the shuttle lift could pass through it as opposed to just having a bridge crane, it could be lower.
Okay.
But the shuttle lift helps tremendously in the offloading process. So currently we have to set up a crane, offload something, put it on a cart, push it, pull it through the building. The shuttle lift can do that kind of in one step. It take it off of a truck and progress it through the building at the different phases.
So continuing with design changes, once we recognized that we were going to provide that large blast building, we looked at all of the work that was out there, and we did an analysis, $13 million net present value on just the blast building alone. We look at all of the rehab work that's going to be occurring at Powerhouse 2 in the future, head gates, stop logs, those sorts of things, and we said, wow, just with a modest efficiency gain and being able to do this work more effectively, there's so much volume of work that a small efficiency gain adds up to a big net present value. So once we saw that, we said, okay, how can we even more maximize the value of the blast building? And we looked at things like HVAC systems and electrical systems, foundations, roof systems. And once you start adding rooms to a building, rather than building independent buildings throughout the site, you gain efficiency. We prioritized our work, and we looked at what was most important to add to that blast building. We came up with the hazardous material storage room, the oil dispensary and storage room, fabrication and machine shop, warehouse and tool room. And then that necessitated that we also get down the list and we start saying, okay, we want to maintain our spending. We want to make sure that we're within budget. This is some of the magic of the GCCM process. At 60% design, we're actually able to go out with the GC and get real market quotes for construction. We had taken the C-19 building that we talked about down at the deck up to the 60% design phase, but we started to recognize that with the cost increases that we're seeing and what the market's returning, we're not going to be able to afford all of it. So we deferred spending on the C-19 building. We stopped at the 60% design phase in order to make sure that we could meet the budget for providing the C-22 and the C-21 building up top. We took the rest of the project out to bid. Over the last 6 weeks, we've done 12 bids. We've received those bids now just as late as last Thursday. We received two large bids. We're at an estimated cost of about $21.2 million, and that's a proposed guaranteed maximum price that we would be coming back to you to talk with you about in 2 weeks. To summarize, the GCCM process prevented bid surprises. We're headed over budget. We would have been opening bids and been coming in with hard bids that you can't take them apart. We would have been delayed. We wouldn't have been able to control where we're at with our schedule. So we were able to maintain our budget, manage the project scope, put a hold on the C-19 building. To recap, the authorized spending over 3 years is $40.1 million. Current spending is estimated at about $36.3 million. We're about $3.8 million below our spending limit, and this does exclude the C-19 building at this time.
So going forward, since we've opened these 12 bid packages as late as last Thursday, we've identified two alternatives for going forward. The first one is potentially delaying the GCCM contract and waiting for better market conditions, because what we're seeing is our overage is in what we're seeing in the bid pricing right now. The other option is that we could go ahead with the GCCM work with the bids that we have to do all of the buildings except for the C-19. And so digging into those two alternatives some more, the delay option, some considerations for that are this first one's, we have uncertainty in cost escalation. So we're looking at what prices are doing in materials, labor, profits. We're not sure where that's going to go. Are we at the peak? Are we going to go up? Are we going to go down? So we're not sure. If we waited more than probably a quarter or two, we would likely lose the GCCM contractor. They have no obligation to stay with us if we defer and wait. If we lost the GCCM, then that would fall back to the district when the timing was right to put together and rebid, revise the contracts to more of the design bid build contract scenario. That would take quite a bit of in-house staff that we don't have available for that. Also, what that would do is it would start to interfere with the Powerhouse 2 rehab work. We're originally visioning that some of the buildings that we weren't going to maintain in the future, we would go ahead and let the Powerhouse 2 rehab contractor use those. And so we would lose some of that value. We would lose our guaranteed maximum price. So again, our GPCM has bid, firm dollar bids. Those are good until early July, and that's a guaranteed maximum price. If we wait and the GCCM goes away, even if it doesn't go away, we'd have to rebid. If they do go away, then we have uncertainty with us doing it. We have no guaranteed maximum price. And then lastly, we lose the efficiency gains that the whole project was justified on by having our crews be able to gain that efficiency by having their equipment tools closest to the work. Under the second option to go forward, that allows us to be able to start the Powerhouse 2 rehab work prior to the major construction being done. So if we can get our blast building, paint building, all those facilities up for our crews, and that frees up some buildings for the contractor, that can be accomplished if we go forward now. We lose that value of all the bidding that's been done on those 12 packages, all the current plans for our infrastructure, our timing for other contracted work at the site. So we have balance of plant work that's going on there as well. We have Powerhouse 1 rehab. So we start to lose some of those things that are gained. What we would propose is to, if we went forward with construction on the other facilities, we would go ahead and complete the C-19 design. We would come up with a new cost estimate for that. We would look at maybe making some changes so that we could get within budget. That also will let us look at what the future is for some of the construction pricing, see whether that's could be coming down in 3 or 6 or 9 months. While we have the GCCM contractor and all their subs on site, it might give us the opportunity to be able to pick up that C-19 building towards the end and allow us to get that done for maybe a lower cost than what we've been budgeting up front. So at this point, staff is recommending to go forward with option 2, and that would be to go ahead and amend the current contract with Leidig for construction. We call that the guaranteed maximum price amendment, and it could be for approximately about $21.2 million. That would allow construction to begin in July with the targeted completion of August 2020. This allows us to complete that highest value work, which again is supplying our crews with sandblast and paint, hazardous materials, their new office building, crew building, and providing space for the rehab contractor. And then going ahead and finish design for C-19 and see what costs we get. Any questions we can answer?
I'd like to add a couple of thoughts if I could. So it's important to review at major milestones along the way. You know, how are we doing against our planning assumptions? And as you can see, a lot has happened over the close to a couple of years since we've last visited this with the board. We definitely have some cost increases due to the bid environment, but we also have some efficiencies that have been gained as we've looked at ways that these buildings can be put together differently than what we originally anticipated. I think the key thought for me is, so we started with a little over $40 million as our expectation as to cost, and we felt that you may recall that it was basically about a neutral. The NPV was about neutral in terms of the benefits that would be generated from that. But we felt there was a good chance there were synergies that we were not being able to capture in the analysis. So what we're finding is that, in fact, we're seeing some of those synergies. Certainly, the $13 million sandblast benefit was not included in the original analysis. So our benefit side is much higher than what we originally anticipated. You don't see an evaluation of the benefit from the mobile crane, but I believe that there will be benefits from that as well that we just don't know quite how to capture in an economic analysis right now. So we're seeing high levels of benefits. We are seeing a net higher cost, although it's only a few million dollars above the $40 million. But again, we should pause on that. And what we've done is taken the marginal building, the building that we thought had the least cost effectiveness, the engineering building, and we're pulling that out and saying, let's not proceed with that at this point. Let's go test the cost-benefit analysis of that building. That keeps us for sure under the $40 million cost that we originally anticipated. So we can say with confidence benefits are higher overall for these buildings than what we originally anticipated. The costs are roughly in line for what's left And so that part is a clearly cost-effective decision, worthwhile proceeding. We'll do a separate analysis on the engineering building, make a determination as to whether it is cost-effective or not. The net then could be that we spend above the $40 million if the engineering building is cost-effective, or maybe we recommend that we're not going to proceed with that. We stick with keeping people in temporary buildings. Don't know the outcome of that. Don't have enough in front of us right now to make that decision. But if we don't act now, we will lose the opportunity to capture that the benefits of maximum bid. And that is very, very valuable to us in this bidding climate. We keep thinking that maybe that's going to change, but to be honest, it hasn't been changing. And so we're anxious to be able to take advantage of it. And that's what leads us to the recommendation. We're confident that what we're recommending to you is cost effective and that we get the benefit of the maximum bid.
Any questions, commissioners?
Great job.
Good presentation.
Good presentation. Thank you. A lot of analysis went into this, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
I just have a comment from as a commissioner. I really appreciate the effort that's being made to really hold the line on budget. I think that's very important. At the same time, as we look at, and I appreciate the cost-benefit analysis, because as we look at the environment of things that we can't control in the bidding climate and things are going to cost more, I personally can say, okay, well, I can fudge a little bit and invest a little bit more and pay more for that environment that we're in, but it's really helpful when I look at those cost benefits to the increased benefits of the building, the increased benefits of the crane that's going to be used, and say, well, yes, we may have some $3 million here, but the cost benefits are going to be 13 to 15, for example, down the road. I think what I'm appreciating is the learning that's going on in this GCM process, and not only learning and making things better, but holding increased cost to a minimum during very competitive times. So I appreciate this. It's very clear to me I just want to let you know I appreciate that.
You're very welcome.
Well, you guys are facing a big challenge, and that is the escalating cost of raw material, and bring it down to a much smaller level. I went to go buy a cedar 4x4. What do you think an 8-foot cedar 4x4 costs? I didn't know I'd need to take out a mortgage just to buy a 4x4. So I understand greatly what the challenges are, and really echo Commissioner McKenna's comments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. So we will plan to bring a resolution back to you at the next meeting. Unless we hear from you, we'd likely put that on consent.
So. Well, and I think the other part of this that I think I really have to, from my vantage point, is I like the idea of taking something and putting a hold on something and not say we're not going to do that. Is it
C-19.
And because obviously we're doing C-19, or we want to do C-19 because there's a need there. And I like the fact that we can say, well, that may not be our highest priority, but it still is a priority. We're going to evaluate it. We're going to learn. We're going to keep figuring this thing out and work towards that goal without saying, well, we're just going to cut that out and you need to continue to live in a shack. But so I think that's important. That's an important message as well, to keep plugging along and making sure that we can do everything in our power to make that happen.
We will.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up is the item 9, and I'm going to turn this over to Eric. We have a proposed settlement agreement with the Hartford Steam Boiler. Hartford Steam Boiler Company. So, Eric?
Thanks, Steve. Eric Walquist, General Counsel, Commissioners. Apologize for, I feel like I'm melting under a cold here as we're sitting here in the room today. Sorry about the sneeze earlier. So Kelly laughed at me as I came back in and said I didn't make it out in time. So you may recall that back in January of this year, the district instituted legal proceedings against one of its insurance providers, Hartford Steam Boiler, over some disputed funds associated with the large unit repairs and the servo rod failures out at Rocky Reach. That action was instituted in Chelan County Superior Court. We mediated by agreement of the parties. In other words, it wasn't forced by the court. Those claims in Seattle for 2 days in May, the 14th and 15th, with a mediator and HSB. We didn't have a settlement result on either of those days, but we did shortly thereafter come to a proposed resolution that was acceptable to both parties, which would resolve the litigation. As we always do here at the district, we make any proposed resolution of these kinds of claims contingent upon board approval after a discussion and presentation to you. And that is today's purpose. So the proposed settlement agreement terms are actually quite simple. The district would receive money for the claims that it was asserting, and it would give a release and therefore some certainty to HSB on the other side, capping their liability for damages. So in sum, the total recovery for the district for the four units, C8, 9, 10, and 11, is $23,653,098. That amount is comprised of $5,682,103 that we've previously received from HSB. Some additional funds that were previously deposited into the registry of the court during the pendency of the litigation. Those amount to $2,008,495. And then what I refer to as new money dollars of $15,962,500. So that, again, brings you to your total of $23,653,098. That would cover all four of the units, C8, 9, 10, and 11. That does include C11, which hasn't opened yet for assessment of damage, but it does assume a damage and provide certainty for both parties in terms of what will be recoverable for any repairs should they be discovered there. Those dollars do include estimated repair costs and business interruption costs. Both are covered losses under our policies. And the district, if the settlement is approved, would agree to dismiss all of its claims against HSB related to any damage to or resulting from the large unit servo rod failures in those units. So what was asserted in the litigation. As I mentioned previously, the settlement is contingent upon the board's approval. Staff is here recommending approval of that resolution today. There is a proposed motion that I've given to you in the packet here today. It's very straightforward, simply moves approval of the proposed settlement as recommended. Should the settlement be approved by the board, then the parties would finish through their lawyers, completing all of the settlement documents necessary to resolve litigation completely and have it dismissed with the court. So that's the presentation for today. Any questions?
Commissioners, do I hear a motion?
I would move to approve the proposed settlement with Hartford Steam Boiler as recommended.
Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The ayes have it.
Thank you, Commissioners.
With that, we have completed the planned morning agenda, and if it's okay with the board, I'd like to move into some manager items that we normally have scheduled for the afternoon.
Good.
Okay. That's fine. That's fine. I'd like to start with Justin Erickson, who's going to provide a strategic planning update.
Good morning, Commissioners. Justin Erickson, Managing Director of District Services. It's great to be with you this morning and give you an update on strategic planning. When we met last, we were finalizing the survey, which has now been mailed to every household in Chelan County. And responses are rapidly coming in, which is great to see. If you're someone like me that gets excited about strategic planning, it's kind of been like Christmas around here the last week, because every day we'll get another big stack in of responses that are being tabulated. And so as of this morning, we're well over 1,100, and there were a couple hundred printed copies that came in the mail this morning. So I think we're doing really good with where we're at. There are nearly 3 weeks left on the response deadline. Looking at outreach efforts, so what we've done to date, of course, is everyone has received something in the mail. Every email address that we have on file has also received a reminder email about the survey. We are implementing a full outreach plan like we do with any large effort. So that includes radio and print ads. Our one of our short video segments is playing at the local theater. And of course, social media. You also heard about Kids Fest earlier this morning. And we had a booth there and lots of participation. I think we had about 60 printed surveys that were responded, that we collected at that event. Also had a renewed interest in reaching out through civic organizations. We spoke last week on May 28th at Chelan Rotary and are with the Cashmere Rotary this Wednesday. So things are going well. I wanted to give you a few more highlights on the student outreach effort. And you might recall that actually occurred at your last meeting the same date and on May 13th. So those are some photographs there from the event and from our interactions with students. I had initially thought that we were going to be able to have between 120 and 140 students. We actually had about 174, and so that was great. We were at Pioneer Middle School, and what I thought I would do is just go through three or four of the questions that we asked them, just so you got a sense of where the youth were when it comes to strategic planning. So we asked them a question about rate increases, but we wanted to make it more applicable to their everyday life. So the scenario that we gave was their favorite candy bar was going to increase in price, and would they rather have that delayed as long as possible and then have a 50-cent increase, or have it increase 10 cents a month over time. So interestingly enough, it was almost 50-50. A slight majority said that they would prefer the incremental increase over a large one-time increase. When it came to Rock Island relicensing and the opportunity that early action provides, 71% of students thought that we should pursue early enhancements. When we asked students about local economic development and the situation that we have between wholesale and local energy sales, and if they would be willing to consider an increase in local rates. That was an interesting response. The highest majority, 35%, were willing to support up to a 10% increase. And then when we looked at the types of things that we should fund.
These are middle schoolers?
These are middle schoolers, yes.
What grade did you say?
10%, sir.
What grade level?
Oh, sixth.
Sixth grade, okay.
Yes. And then when we discussed public power benefit criteria and early action opportunities and investments, and asked them to look at prioritization of the types of things that we should invest in, the top three that were selected in order of priority were economic development, recreational opportunities, and environmental stewardship. So interesting results, and it will be particularly interesting at the end of this endeavor when we can compare those with the adult population that we're surveying.
So, Justin, do you think they had a sense of what economic development means? I mean, what does that mean to them?
Right.
Did anybody express it?
So I wasn't there in person, so I can't give you a firsthand account. But I can tell you that we had about an hour with each of the classes, and so what they witnessed was how the PUD works video, which you saw, as well as some additional education from staff. And so I think they were moderately aware of the situation, but obviously they have a different perspective and a different life experience at age 12. So,
yeah, middle school kids do really well with scenarios. You know, it wouldn't be necessarily the adult scenario, but they can really process at a pretty significant level.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly when there's things that are juxtaposition and they have to choose. My gosh, they just get self-righteous and really go after it. So it's fun to watch them do it.
So Dennis, the candy bar scenario is interesting to me. That gives me a glimpse into the future of, you know, we're not going to make people happy with any decision, whether it's 50-50.
Well, I was kind of going back in my mind, you know, up at Grand Coulee, they have, you know, in their display area right in front of the dam, it has a whole scenario in terms of what public power has to deal with as far as fish mitigation and other kinds of things. And our oldest granddaughter, when she was about that age, was sitting there and just looked at me at one point and said, "Grandpa, being a commissioner is really hard because there are no right answers." You know, I mean, there's just not that definitive answer. And it really got to her. So the next morning at breakfast, she thought about a lot of them and was kind of picking through them, and she was ready to make her choices. But it was just that mind that, you know, when there wasn't something that was clear.
Mm-hmm.
And kids are great at it, I think.
One of the benefits of this exercise with the students is that they were encouraged to go home and obviously share this information with their parents and guardians. And then they had a separate link that was unique, separate from our other survey link. And so we were able to also get about 175 parent responses through this effort.
Oh,
so,
that's cool.
That's good.
Very useful on multiple fronts. And so I'm just going to conclude by talking about the Rocky Reach field experience, which is tomorrow. And you should have received an email where you were invited as well. I believe we've heard back from President Arsenault. So we still have at least one more slot available. So if any of you would like to join us tomorrow, Senator Hawkins and Representative Gaynor will be with us as well. And I've shared the details before, but I'll just go over them briefly as I conclude. So select students from this activity, about 25 students, were able to join us tomorrow starting at about 9 a.m. in the morning. And they'll be able to take, they'll go from the school bus to Rocky Reach. They will be involved in various programs. Actually be able to take a Link Transit electric bus powered by hydropower across the dam, and then we'll be interacting with our biologist at our collection facility on the Douglas County side, so the East Bank hatchery facility. And then they'll come back across the dam, conclude with some more programming, and then have lunch in the park there. So it's going to be a really great opportunity to interact with youth. And so if anybody is interested, welcome to shout at me now or catch me after the meeting. And so with that, where we're headed again is June 21st is the deadline for survey response. And we'll be collating those and provide a full update to you in August. Hopefully be able to share at least some preliminary information, maybe informally before then. One of the challenges will be is that we do have several open-ended questions. And so we already have several hundred responses that we're sifting through and trying to categorize. So that will probably be the largest time issue with summarizing the results. The other data will be ready really instantaneously. And then I think we're on good track to prepare the final draft strategic plan in August and present to you something that hopefully you can consider adoption in September. Any questions?
Commissioners?
Good.
Great program.
Thank you.
Yes. Yep. Thank you.
It was also good to see the op-ed piece by Rufus.
Yeah.
By Rufus Woods, supported the PUD and the outreach. So I think that's all dovetailing together and appreciate it.
Next up, I want to invite Andy Wendell to come up and provide an update on some outreach activities in the Chelan area regarding substation and transmission planning.
Good morning, Commissioners. Thanks for having me this morning. I'm just going to give a brief update on some community engagement efforts that we've been enduring in the Chelan area. We've been soliciting feedback for a potential location for a new substation and a connecting transmission line, in addition to soliciting feedback on some fire hardening projects that we're recommending in the Chelan area, in particular from the Chelan Falls to the Union Valley substation. Our outreach efforts to date, from January 1st to date, have included some live radio interviews, interviews with other local news and media in the Chelan area. We've done specific meetings with public entities such as the City of Chelan, as well as the Washington State Fish and Wildlife. Additionally, we've had some stakeholder and community leader luncheon. We've done two public drop-in sessions at the Chamber of Commerce. We've done some specific outreach to the neighbors of the proposed substation area and the adjacent property owners in that area as well. We've also done some direct mailers, and we've responded to several dozen emails and phone calls and just general inquiries. So specific to the fire hardening project,
where that project starts and where that project would end. Essentially, Chelan Falls, our house down here, and the Union Valley substation up in this particular area. So, thank you.
So, several miles of construction changing from wood poles to steel poles. Essentially, the public has expressed very high support for the project and very much, you know, low opposition to the project. So we're going in the right direction there. I would say that out of the three alternatives, alternative number one, which is rebuild the entire line to the Union Valley substation, is probably the most interesting in terms of customer feedback, lots of support there. So where we're heading next with that is there's specific outreach to the individual property owners that live in and along and adjacent to that line. We'll include in that a letter with some details around the project, and we'll be soliciting direct feedback from customers and asking them to contact us if they've got any questions or concerns. In addition, we'll be doing some field staking. So for the proposed new line, we'll have some stakes in the field for people to look at. Really, there hasn't been a lot of engagement in terms of people giving us a lot of feedback other than just the general vicinity in Chelan. The specific property owners, we haven't heard much from them. So we suspect this next outreach effort will hear more as they receive those letters. Specific to the substation, we came into this last engagement with really four areas within this general vicinity. On this particular map, you can see that the Chelan Dam would be down here. So this is looking kind of south towards the Butte area. And we identified four sites, A, B, C, and D, in this general vicinity. All four sites are on property that the Chelan County PUD owns at this time. Essentially, the outreach effort yielded that there was near unanimous support for Site B. Site B is located here. It's directly adjacent to the county road right-of-way, or the gorge road that comes through here. It's a relatively flat
site that would accommodate the district's current standards. There was some interest in Site A as an alternative. However, some excavation concerns in Site A kind of yielded people looking back to the Site B. I would add that an early reconnaissance by the district engineering suggests that Site B would be most conducive out of the four sites for building a substation.
Andrew, what's the, am I reading that, private property? What's that?
So
property directly above Site B, sandy
okay,
looking.
Yes, yeah, so this is the I think the local folks refer to it as the junkyard,
right?
But
that's
it's a salvage yard of
some
type. I'm not sure what the exact term is for it.
Oh, I can see now. And the trailhead for our trail is down by Site D. Gotcha. Okay.
Right, the trailhead is here, and this Site B. Of course, it would impact the trail. We've had lots of conversations with people that use the trail and got feedback from them. I would just add that Site A and Site B, we think, are still in the spectrum of the possibility, with a focus on B being the preferred site. Site C and D, as we learned, there are some, in addition to community feedback, providing some concern with those. This line here represents the penstock from Schlan Falls that goes down. It is, as I understand it, it's a depth of around 50 feet, but building any kind of a substation over the top of that may be problematic in the future.
Site B, you said, impacts the trail. Are there some concerns about that?
Yeah, you can see the trail would come through that area, so it's possible. In order to be able to get the distribution lines out of Site B, we would want to use the county road right-of-way corridor, which means we would want to be just directly adjacent to the county road right-of-way. So that would require us to do something with the trail, possibly reroute it around Site B, something of that nature.
Is that a steep slope right? Well, no, you said it's flat.
It's relatively
flat. I like that, but...
Yeah, it does slope off, but it's relatively flat here.
So potentially you could go around it. You've determined
that. We think so. Mm-hmm. We think so. Site, in addition, in Site C and D, I just wanted to add that we know that the trailhead parking, we believe that based on some of the additional trails in this area that are proposed, that the parking area would need to be expanded. So being adjacent to the parking area would not be very conducive for expanding that trailhead. And then, in addition, you can see this permitted area here. This is Schlan County PUD property that's permitted for the use of hang gliding. It's an alternative landing site for hang gliding. And we did have an opportunity to engage the two principals of that club that used that area. Obviously, they advocated for a site that was further away from hang gliding.
Yeah.
They might be able to land in a substation, but probably just once.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to pop off and say, Site B, just put a gate on each end and check for the Darwin effect.
Sure. But that was secondary to the fact that the penstock moves directly through that area. So we're focusing in on Site B at this point in time. I think just a couple of benefits that I wanted to highlight about that particular substation, Site B, is it is close to the load center, meaning we can get distribution power out of that to the Schlan area fairly inexpensively and effective. The other benefit there is we believe it has a minimal aesthetic impact to the neighboring properties. It's just a little bit further out there, out of the view corridors.
Andrew, where's Carol Wool's property?
Carol Ulls is here.
Oh, good. So that's a good, is that a quarter of a mile away? At least.
It's probably in that area of around 1,000 feet, yeah. And we've been engaging
with her,
mm-hmm. regularly. Mm-hmm. And this property here, this property line represents the line between the PUD property and private property. And then this property has recently sold and is... they're looking at doing multifamily housing in that particular area. So,
Andrew, it's difficult to tell from here. Is there a slope? this house that we were just talking about in the lower right, is that sit below grade? That
yeah, there is a slight difference in elevation. It's not drastic, but you would have to, you know, really kind of be looking for it from a view perspective. I think based on what we've seen for the proposed housing development in here, multifamily housing, it's multi-level as well, so it would likely obstruct any views in the background there. The other point I wanted to make about that substation site is it is on property that the PUD owns right now. So next steps with the substation site. We are moving kind of away from the community engagement temporarily to move into more of an engineering feasibility. We want our engineering group to look at some costs and constructability of that site, make sure that it's feasible. And then, you know, we'll circle back with the public once we have a little bit more as far as the layout and arrangements. And we can talk again at that point in time. But we're moving into that, recommending to move into that construction feasibility and cost analysis for them. There is a transmission route. As you know, with every substation, we have to have that transmission. So in addition, we've been engaging the public on that. And with, again, near unanimous support, the public has pointed towards Route A as being the preferred option. Route A starts at Chelan Falls, and it moves up and generally follows the Gorge Road against the hillside and comes out to the substation location there. The other alternatives, there was actually, this map shows three, there was actually four alternatives that we brought to the public, but Site B was coming through the industrial area and then crossing over the gorge to some degree. Site C was coming from the Union Valley substation, coming down through the town of Chelan, crossing the gorge around the dam area, and then hitting the substation. And then we had conversations about bringing a transmission line in from the existing South Shore substation along the South Shore as well. The Site A, of course, as I mentioned, was near unanimous support. Site B, there was slight interest in that from a few stakeholders, but not to the extent that they wanted us to move away from Site A completely. Site C and what I would call D on the South Shore, I would say that there was what I would say is firm opposition to C and D, as you can imagine. I would add that the transmission route, Route A, is the benefits there is that it is the highest reliable source, considering the transmission power flows and future maintenance. Site A would yield the highest reliability for us. In addition, we believe that it has the least amount of aesthetic impacts, and the PUD does own all the property that transmission line route would be on. However, it's important to note that on April 5th, 2019, following an engagement with Washington State Fish and Wildlife in the city of Chelan, we did receive a letter or an email from Washington State Fish and Wildlife, you know, expressing their concerns regarding potential impacts of wildlife in that area. They didn't say specifically yes or no, they do or don't support, but certainly they wanted to continue the conversation with the PUD. So what we're recommending at this point in time is that we do engage Washington State Fish and Wildlife and learn about what those specific concerns are and if there's options or alternatives around mitigating those concerns, whether they're from a constructability standpoint or a long-term maintenance standpoint. So that's where we'll probably focus our efforts in next is finding out what challenges we have there. So with that, that concludes our outreach efforts in Chelan. I can answer any other questions that you have.
Commissioners, questions? That was a good presentation.
Really was.
Really good.
So I'd just like to add it that this issue with the Fish and Wildlife Service is significant because you can't just site a substation. You've got to site a substation and a transmission line, ultimately, in order to be able to make things work. So we're going to work to get to the bottom of that.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. I would add that Fish and Wildlife did express an interest in understanding where the public stood, and public meaning the variety of stakeholders in the Chelan area and the other municipality and the other public entities. And so I think we've got enough information to go back and have that conversation with Fish and Wildlife now. So,
do we know if there's migration issues, or do we have any idea what Fish and Wildlife's concern might be?
Yeah, their email just expressed concern with two specific species, one being the golden eagle. There's historically been some nesting in around that area.
In particular, there was a nesting site in the lower gorge area. I actually had an opportunity with our Fish and Wildlife guy Vaughn Pope, actually got to see the eagles a couple years ago in the bottom of that gorge. And then up here, what they call Elephant's Head, up in that area, there was a historical nesting spot in there as well. Nothing necessarily directly in the route of the transmission line, but I think flight patterns and things have an issue. Additionally to the golden eagles, that area, as I understand it, has bighorn sheep occupy that particular area. I haven't run into them yet, but I'm sure that they're there. And so those are the two species of Fish and Wildlife, actually.
Thank you.
Commissioners, if you're good, I know you wanted to finish early, but I actually had brought Lisa Sanders in to do travel, and I think we could do that quickly.
And
we were able to do that and then get you out a little bit before 12.
Okay.
So Lisa, would you like to join?
Hello, commissioners.
Hi, Lisa.
So we have Commissioners McKenna and Smith traveling in June to APPA in Austin, Texas. Are those still good plans?
I'm curious, on the APPA, you've got McKenna on 613 and Smith on 612. Well, coming back. Okay, that's, never mind. I'm good.
You're good?
Yep.
Okay. Commissioner McKenna, I haven't seen your airfare, so let me know if we do need to make any changes.
I'm good, and and I am participating in that day of giving. I see the note on Randy's, just FYI for you.
So you registered, or do I need
yes.
to do that?
Mm-hmm. No, I'm good.
We're working at the same place.
Oh, good.
I got to keep an eye on Randy, make sure he's working.
Thank you.
Well, we all know he takes breaks.
Not on that one. Nowhere on the property.
So on the 27th, Commissioner Congdon is participating in the Water Committee meeting. Still doing that?
Not sure how or where, but yes, I'll let you know.
In Olympia?
It is in Olympia.
And we have a hotel room held, so let me know if you don't need that.
Yeah, thanks.
Commissioner Smith in Richland, July 5 through 8.
Yeah, and they're taking care of the accommodations. I still don't know where it is.
Okay. July Waputa meetings are in Leavenworth. I don't have registration forms for that yet. The APPA policymakers for Commissioner Smith, I did hold a room for you today.
Good.
And thank I you. Do have your completed alternate travel form. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Arsenault, the Oregon PUD Association meeting, you still planning to
yes.
do that? I sent an email today requesting hotel information. I'm not sure where,
okay.
if they have a designated hotel or not.
On it either.
Okay. I just made hotel reservations for the Waputa meetings in September at Suquamish for Commissioners Arsenault, Bowles, McKenna, and Smith. No Congdon. And I held those the 17th through the 21st, not knowing what those schedules were being. So we can firm those up individually as you decide your plans. September, I'm not sure what dates. Commissioner Congdon to Kalispell for NWPPA.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'll get with you about that.
Okay.
Water workshop is, it is 10, 11, 12, 13, I believe. September. I'll
confirm the water that. Workshop?
No. This is
Kalispell.
NWPPA in Kalispell. Yeah, water workshop's the last week.
Right.
So, unless you're going to fly before that, we really need to use that credit. This would be our last chance.
I used it. Didn't we use it?
Mm-mm.
We didn't?
No, you used a credit you personally paid for.
Oh, it was my personal credit. Yeah. You're right. Okay.
So we still have the credit on this last page.
Oh, okay.
That expires in September.
All right.
So
remind me if you don't hear from me quick. Soon. Okay. So yeah, so that'll be a flight. Yeah, we'll talk.
Don't book it without me.
No, I won't do it.
Don't book it without me.
Lisa, on those credits on tickets canceling from New Orleans, I'm using that ticket this month to go to Austin.
Okay.
So I'll take care of that.
Okay. Thank you. So September water workshop, 25th through 7th. October budget committee meeting for Commissioner Smith.
Mm-hmm.
That we have a room for that. And you have the LEHI also.
Lehi, they call it.
Lehi.
And once again, they're taking care of the airfare and the hotels.
Okay.
And I'm going to check and see if that might be good for now, just because I know we have a couple of commissioners who needed to leave early. So are we?
Oh, good for now.
Have we got good through September? Is that good for now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then I will follow up with you at a later time. I had IT create a commissioner calendar, a commissioner travel calendar that I will start scheduling everything to your calendars regarding travel. The specific calendar, trying to streamline things. So I'm testing that with Rebecca right now, but hopefully that will help some of the calendar cancellation decline issues we've had a couple with lately.
Okay.
So if you have any suggestions or questions with that, just let me know.
Just solve my technical problems.
Thank you.
I'm just trying. That's it.
Okay.
Great. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
So we will take a break for lunch and come back for the 1 o'clock session at 1.
Yep.
Good afternoon and welcome to the June 3rd, 2019 business session of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission meeting. I'd like to remind everyone to please silence any electronic devices you may have with you today. Also, welcome to all of our visitors. And we place a great deal of value on public input at our meetings. And since our meetings are recorded, if you wish to address the commission, please address any items on the agenda. We ask you to come to the microphone, state your name and address for the records, and please, if you could, keep your comments to 3 minutes or so. So we're going to move right along. Steve, I'm going to let you announce the next action.
So I want to talk about the new Diamond Foundry contract. Lindsay Mons will be coming up to discuss that. Recall that we did an in-depth briefing on this at the last board meeting, and consequently we are not planning to repeat that. That information is available. We've received, at least as last I heard, no public comment. We are open to public comment today. Lindsay will do a very brief overview, and then we'll get to public comment.
All right. Well, Steve, you pretty much took the words out of my mouth. Lindsay Mons, business manager in customer utilities. As Steve mentioned, we've been going over this contract with you for several meetings, I believe the last three, and in a fair level of depth, so I was not planning to represent that today. However, at our last meeting, we did promise the public that we would give them an opportunity to respond. to that contract, which has been posted on our website for the last about 2 weeks. So today is that opportunity in advance of the resolution that you have on your agenda later this afternoon. I'm happy to provide a brief summary if you'd like. There are a few new members in the public here today, so I will do that quickly here. So we've been working with the Diamond Foundry since 2017, working on locating an area in our system that would work for their location of a facility to produce diamonds here in the Wenatchee Valley. So those relationships have been great. Lee Dilatori is here with the Diamond Foundry with us today. That contract is for up to 19 megawatts. Our current distribution system, however, can only provide up to 7 megawatts in the area. So they have entered into agreements with their landlord to construct a third-party substation in the area. The rates within the contract are tied to our existing rate schedules, Schedule 3, Schedule 35, and Schedule 4, which provides the board the opportunity to treat this customer like any other as far as rate changes go along the way. Within Schedule 35, part of that rate schedule is an upfront capital charge, which has been reserved or held on this contract pending the construction of that third-party substation, which satisfies the intent of that upfront capital charge. The term of the contract is 10 years with an option to extend an additional 5, should we all agree to that. That's the quick and dirty of it. if you have any questions, I'm happy to take those.
Commissioners, any questions?
Ready for public comment.
All right. Is there any public comment? Hearing none?
I think at this point, my recommendation would be that we move to a vote from the board rather than hold this for a resolution later. I think this is a significant contract that it deserves separate attention from the board.
I did have one just, I'd call it tongue-in-cheek comment. I can see the new reader board outside of Wenatchee now, the Apple capital of the world and the jewel of the Columbia, something like that. I just thought I'd add that.
Okay, well, commissioners, I guess we're ready for a motion.
Eric, do we have a previously structured motion, or do you want us to?
So it would be to adopt the resolution. I think it's styled as resolution number 15.
Okay.
Currently on the agenda. So just any motion to approve resolution number 15 as presented would get us there, Commissioner.
Yeah, I move that we accept Resolution 15 as presented.
I'll second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion?
Just to make the record complete, I'd suggest that in the past we've read these motions, so our resolution, so how about if I do that real quick?
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that we are complete. A resolution authorizing the general manager enter into an interconnection and service agreement with Diamond Foundry 1 LLC for electric service under rate schedule 4, large load.
I think that's what I said.
So they're hearing no discussion. We'll take a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The ayes have it.
Thank you. Thank you, Lindsay.
Congratulations all, and welcome.
Yes, welcome.
Does the gentleman want to say anything?
Please.
Good afternoon. My name is Lee Dilatori. I'm the general manager of the Diamond Foundry facility here in Wenatchee. And first of all, I want to thank the board for your vote, positive vote on the approval of this, and that will greatly enable us to grow as a company. And we're looking forward to that. I wanted to. Had a statement here I wanted to pass on. We've passed it around within our company and thought it was a brief summary of some of the thoughts that we had regarding this point in time.
Can you get a little closer to the, yeah, thank you.
Do you pull it? Sorry.
There we go. So Diamond Foundry is, and I'm going to read it, so bear with me. So Diamond Foundry is honored and excited about the PUD enabling us
to expand in Wenatchee. We'll make good use of this capacity, and we'll strive to make the community proud of this new asset that we hold very dear. Our president and production president, Kyle Gazze, will be traveling up here later on this week to meet with Steve and as for a formal signing agreement. Diamond Foundry, we are finding incredible demand for diamonds produced above ground in America. The growth has been incredible and is a testament to the need for diamonds with no environmental or human harm. It's one of our biggest value differentiators between us and earth mined diamonds. Furthermore, we are developing new technologies and have begun to introduce the use of diamonds from power electronics to satellites to 5G communications. So there's other areas within the different industries that we hope to expand in the site that we have now here. And going forward, we hope to get into new markets and have this become a growing business and in a versatile business as well, not just for the consumer industry. We're looking forward to Wenatchee being known for where our sustainable diamonds come from. That's really important to us. We very much took a lot of time to select the site with the assistance of many people and organizations locally, and we think that this was a terrific move in retrospect to the last year or so that we've been here, and we're enjoying it so far, and we'll continue to, I'm sure. We're very grateful for the support, specifically to the city of Wenatchee, Mayor Frank Koontz and his staff, the Port of Chelan County, in particular Craig Larson, the Business Development Director, and past Executive Director Pat Jones, and of course the current Executive Director Jim Koontz. The PUD, Chad Rissman, for his technical support, Lindsay Mons, for the many emails and phone calls and meetings I've had along for the last, seems like last year and a half or so, to get to this point here. And in particular, support Steve Wright to drive your team and their excellent staff and the supporting of us to get to this point as well. So thank you. Also, the least, Stemmelt Growers, Executive Vice President Jay Fulbright, who I've been working with for months on the substation plans, and also, of course, CEO Wes Matheson for his support all along the way as well from the beginning. So thank you very much for helping us to continue to utilize renewable energy in our growth processes as the world's only carbon neutral diamond producer. Yeah. Thanks. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Do you have a diamond on your... on your, we could see.
I do have a little one. In there.
So maybe I wasn't out of line calling it the jewel of the Columbia.
We'd like to get there at some point.
So we have a retail store locally?
There's a website we primarily use for business to consumer.
Okay. So, great.
Yep. Fabulous. Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Lee. With that, we are ready to move back to addressing the consent agenda.
I'll be back.
Okay. Commissioners, we have a consent agenda in front of us.
I would move to approve the consent agenda with the inclusion of Resolution 16 that we talked about earlier today.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
We moved and seconded. Any discussions? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? The ayes have it. Okay.
Great. We are ready to move to the regular agenda. This would be starting with agenda item 14, resolution rejecting the bid of General Pacific Incorporated and accepting the bid of Anixter Incorporated of Portland, Oregon, bid number 19-38 for supply of substation circuit switchers. I believe Jack Naberski is here to present today.
Hello.
Hi there. Hi. Welcome.
So I'm here to present on rejecting the low bid for circuit switchers in the amount of $309,730. and awarding to the second low bidder of Annixter for $528,789. The reasons for this are the low bidder did not meet the technical specification. Our standard circuit switcher, and in the technical specification, it called for a vertical opening integral disconnect on the circuit switcher. That was quoted by Annixter. General Pacific quoted a product that was a horizontal open, and it was not an integral disconnect.
Interesting. I'd like to add that, you know, in general, it's very important that companies respond to the specs, and we've, in fact, talked about that a number of times here before. It's possible that there's something interesting about this that might cause us to rethink our specs for the future, and I know that we're committed to taking a look at that. On the other hand, we have some very important timelines to hit here, particularly with respect to substations, and staying on course with respect to meeting those timelines is critical to providing reliable service in the county. So the recommendation to reject is, I believe, is the staff recommendation. We feel very comfortable with that. We also are looking to see whether there's opportunities to learn from this and see if there's something that might allow us to reduce costs in the future. We'll also say standardization is important to us too. So we may be able to save on a particular item, but if we lose standardization, we can lose overall in terms of the cost effectiveness of our operation. So we'll have to do some balancing on that as we look at this for the future.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. Commissioners, any questions?
No.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the presentation.
All right. Thank you.
That's it for our regular agenda.
I would move approval of Resolution 15.
Second?
14. Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The ayes have it.
That moves us through our regular agenda, and would like to continue with manager items. So I'd like to start with John Wisniewski to provide an update on the Lake Chelan lake level management.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. John Wisniewski with the Energy Planning and Trading Group. I'll give you an update here on Lake Chelan lake levels. So this is a graphic we used last year pretty successfully to help communicate. I'll highlight the 70% of average water supply forecast. We still feel is quite accurate for this year. The green line here is actual lake levels over time up to the current, and the two black lines are our target curves. We're following the target curve for dry and average years with our 70% of average forecast. And you can see our current lake level here is just above our target curve very close, which we feel very comfortable with. We've come in above our target elevations to date, and we do expect to continue to meet our target elevations in the future. This peach-colored band here shows our modeling for a range of potential future lake levels. So we do expect to fill the lake on time and, you know, have lake levels above 1,098 feet by July 1st. We also have this bar graph here, which shows where the water has gone that the lake has received to date. So the blue here is water that has been retained in the lake for refill, which is almost 10 feet of water. The orange is water spilled into the Chelan River Gorge, and we have not had to spill for headwater control this year, so this orange band, this 0.3 feet of water, has all been to meet our minimum flow requirement of 80 CFS, which is present all year round. And then this gray is the water that we've used to generate electricity with.
Any anticipation that you'll have to do any additional spill given the 70%?
It looks like this may be a year, actually, where we may be able to operate the project efficiently enough to get by without having to spill for headwater control. There could be some other type of event that happens that would cause us to spill to protect the project, but it is certainly a possibility this year that we do make it through the refill without having to spill for headwater control.
Interesting.
About a week and a half ago, I think I had Lake Chelan running down my driveway. great presentation. Any questions, Commissioner?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well done.
Next up, I want to invite Debbie Gallagher and John Seigerser. They are going to describe the pictures that you may have noticed are sitting up here waiting for a discussion.
Unbelievable. Huh?
Yeah.
Do you mind if we stand?
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
Grab a mic.
Just this one. Oh, there you go. Thank you. So I'm John Seigerser. I'd like to introduce Carl Specht and Laura Sterling. Of course, you know Debbie. So Carl and Laura took these pictures and submitted them to the Department of Energy to their Make a Splash photo competition. And each of them won third prize in for the overall hydro category.
Wow.
So these pictures will be displayed at the Department of Energy's home office in Washington, D.C., as well
that
as used
so
on their
cool.
website.
Wow, very cool.
So anyway, we just wanted to acknowledge Carl and Laura. Say thank you.
Wow. Thank you. Yes, thank you. What a great job.
So I don't know about yours and how the opportunity presented itself, but Laura's was kind of funny. She was sitting over in the Discovery Center, and it was a very rainy day. And she saw this rainbow form, and so she grabbed her iPhone and ran outside and dodging showers of rain to try to get the perfect vantage point for this photo. And so sometimes, you know, the best things are when they're unplanned. So beautiful photo. We've used it a lot on Facebook, and Laura's done a fabulous job grabbing a lot of different photos and doing a lot of stuff for us on Facebook. So great job, Laura.
That was cool.
And
Carl, talk about your picture a little bit. Tell us about it.
I took this from the north side of Powerhouse 2. I've had an opportunity at Rock Island to take a ton of pictures. This is one of my favorites, a little bit of color correction, but it's during our spill, and it's really, Rock Island has a character that I think this picture really captures, so I was happy to do it, and glad to associate Chelan PUD with the contest.
That's great. Nice. Now, did you use an iPhone as well, or?
No, that was actually the Galaxy S.
Okay, great. Good competition.
Indeed.
Yeah. Wow. So I might add a couple of things. Number one, you've seen Laura's picture on the cover now of the NHA Chelan document on reinvigorating hydropower. You may recognize it from there. So it's being used and widely distributed throughout the country. And second, it's our intent to have these framed and find suitable places for them as well in the district, because I think they display the pride we have in our projects.
Absolutely.
They wouldn't get a lot of exposure in a commissioner's office, but there is space.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah.
Well, right. Beautiful. Thank
Laura,
you.
Is there anything you would like to add?
Thank you. I think for the opportunity, and we're provided an amazing backdrop every day to steal pictures up. So I'm thankful for all that our crews do to keep things looking as beautiful in our parks department for the opportunity.
That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you
so much. Appreciate it.
That brings us to the end of manager items, and at this point, I believe we're up to commissioner items.
Okay, commissioners, do we have any items?
Wow. Commissioner McKenna and I are heading out on Thursday for close to a week in at American Public Power, starting off with a day of giving, working at a food bank, and culminating with about 5 days of various meetings, Saturday through Wednesday. So,
very good. You guys are really dedicated. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I have one thing to say. I had an honor of being invited back to Washington, D.C. To receive an award presented to Chelan County PUD. And not knowing exactly what to expect when I was back there, I will tell you that we were in good company.
This is United States Energy Association had nominated, and we received the Corporate Volunteer Award of the Year. Now, this was in conjunction with USAID and USEA. And I'm going to read just a short sentence or two of what they said in their little flyer that I'll pass this around. Commissioners can take a look at it. It says, USEA is honored to recognize Chelan County PUD as a 2019 Volunteer of the Year for its contributions to the Uganda Utility Partnership. Under the USEA/USAID Energy Utility Partnership Program, Chelan County Public Utility District is a U.S. customer-owned, vertically integrated utility, began delivering power in 1947. Now I'm going to just skip on here a little bit. In 2008, Chelan PUD sent volunteer experts, I'm going to slaughter this name, Kalumpa, Uganda, to share their knowledge in asset management and operations and maintenance of hydropower plants. And for that, we received an award. What's really important to tell you is that the other volunteer corporation of the year was Edison Electric, huge company. So we are in great, great company. And this was quite an award. We will be receiving a plaque. I think it's going to be arriving at your doorstep, Steve, in the next day or so. Very nice framed plaque and great recognition for our utility. So, yes.
Could I add to that a really important comment for the recording? There was an individual, Anita Decker, who is just recently retired head of Northwest Public Power Association, that helped facilitate the connection with USAID, because when we started down this path, we made the decision that no utility resources would be spent on this effort, and that that we had to secure funding for this to happen. And the two people that went took personal leave to go. They were not paid to go. It was purely truly a volunteering effort. So no monies came out of Chelan PUD for this. And I take my hat off to John Yale and Janelle Ulrich. And I think Kirk Hudson had a little bit to do with this too. So there were a lot of people that really, stepped up. It was neat.
Absolutely. Thank you, Randy, for bringing that up. And also mentioning John Yale and Janelle, because they made it happen. While I was back in Washington, D.C., the positive comments that I received from members and employees of USEA, USAID, all commenting about our staff, the high caliber of the folks that went over to Uganda that worked with that team. And as a matter of fact, I haven't shared this with Steve yet, there was a certain degree of a plea to please allow this to continue. Let this dialogue and this communication continue. So hopefully there'll be other opportunities going forward in the future. But so we have at least, we have many staff members to thank for making this happen, but we have two that were our ambassadors to Uganda that did an excellent job. So, and I think that's commissioner items. We've already covered commissioner travel, and now it's follow-up of delegation.
We had three action items to follow up on, two of which we are not ready to present yet. One was with respect to better understanding the energy commitments graph and the energy resources quarterly report, and one with respect to the tour of the Stimmelt Old Station campus. So we just have more work to do on both of those. Third one, with respect to following up on a tour for commissioners of the infrastructure supplying the Diamond Foundry. Our sense of that is that should wait until the fall, because right now we don't have much to show you, but by the fall we will. So we're going to get back to you. We've got it on our to-do list, get back to you in the fall. And that's it.
Okay. Any delegation items from today?
Got one that Felicity will provide the loop trail extension project route once it's defined. That may be a bit in the future. It's probably going to be a few months at least before we better understand that. That bit also as well, and we need to come back with you a better defined project budget for that whole activity of acquiring land, developing the trail, and potentially dealing with a memorial of some kind to the Horan House. Did we miss anything?
Okay. Do we have any additional public comment? See any public in the room?
And do we have any matters of general business that are necessary? Yes.
I just have to say that I'm amazed, I would say dismayed, that we haven't got executive session on the agenda today. But
started with it.
Oh, that's right.
Something more important.
All right. Very good. Then we're good.
So I want to say just one thing, and this is a recognition of what will be taking place later on this week as the 75th anniversary of the Normandy landing. And that, as Tom Brokaw wrote a book about the Greatest Generation, and there's been recently lots of documentaries on television talking about the horrific, unbelievably scary situation that these men and women entered into. It's humbling, and I don't even want to think about what I might do, put in the same kind of situation as these men and women. But it's certainly worthy at this moment in time to take a second and recognize the great sacrifice that so many of them made. So many of them, even today, are unable to talk about events that they encountered on that day or during that period of time in their life. So just wanted to recognize that. Okay, so without there being an executive session, I think we are at the close of our meeting for today, and we are adjourned.